This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Today, we're taking a look at the latest developments in the long-running saga of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Julian Assange has been imprisoned in the UK since April 2019 and is facing extradition to the US to face charges under its Espionage Act for his role in procuring and publishing classified government information on WikiLeaks. Last week, a UK court ruled against the extradition, granting Julian Assange a reprieve, but the case is far from over. So joining me today to discuss the implications of the Julian Assange case on press freedom is Peter Gresta, veteran journalist and the UNESCO Chair in Journalism and Communication at the University of Queensland. Peter, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
So Julian Assange and the WikiLeaks portal he founded are controversial, to say the least. He was widely lauded as a hero by media and free speech advocates back in 2010, when WikiLeaks revealed footage of human rights abuses being committed by the US military in Afghanistan and Iraq. But in the years since then, his status as a defender of the free press has lost some, or maybe even a lot, of its shine. You've spoken in the past that you don't see him as a journalist and that Assange shouldn't be able to claim freedom of press as protection. So maybe you can help us understand, how is what Assange is doing, which can be broadly summed up as revealing information that can be used to hold the powerful to account, how is this different from journalism or even being a whistleblower?
Well, I suppose in some respects, Julian could be equated as being, or described as being, a whistleblower, although he didn't blow the whistle. He made the whistle available to Chelsea Manning, who was the person who delivered or who leaked the documents, those critical documents that you've just been speaking about. Let me first say that I have a lot of respect for Julian and what WikiLeaks has done. I think that they have exposed an awful lot of critical information that absolutely needed to be in the public domain. But I don't think simply making information available to the public counts as journalism. You see, to my mind, journalism is more than just simply putting information out there, putting documents up online. Journalism requires a certain process of verification, of filtering, of editorial decision-making, of redacting to make sure that you are protecting the sensitive detail that might put other people at risk. It requires editorial context. It's a fairly complex process, and the more information, the more documents that you've got, then the more complex the process becomes. And in my view, WikiLeaks didn't do that. What they did was something else. Now, again, I think there is a separate argument to be had about whether or not it was appropriate. But my point is that journalism is a process, and it comes with ethical and professional responsibilities. And I don't think there is evidence that WikiLeaks or Julian Assange applied those processes and those ethics. And that's why I think it's hard for us to therefore describe them as journalists and for Julian to claim protection as under press freedom laws.
How do you think Julian Assange sees himself? Does he see himself as a journalist, or, I mean, what do you think?
I think Julian certainly described himself as a journalist, and his lawyers describe him as a journalist, but just saying you're a journalist doesn't make it so. You need to look at what's produced before you can decide whether it counts as journalism. There'll be an ongoing debate, I suppose, but I think the issue of what journalism looks like is probably more important now than just about ever before, because there's an awful lot of information out there online which is journalism like. You know, you open stuff up on social media, on blogs and so on, and it looks like journalism. But I don't think if you scratch the surface, it actually counts, because there isn't necessarily, and I'm not saying it's the case with WikiLeaks, but there isn't always fact-checking procedures. There isn't a right of reply for people who've been criticized in certain places, in certain blogs, on certain sites. There isn't always a complaints procedure for people who think that the information is wrong. There's not always public corrections or attractions. You know, there's a whole host of ethical and professional obligations, I think, that journalists have to stick to. And as I said, regardless of what Julian describes him as, I just don't see that he's fulfilled the requirements of what I consider to be a journalism.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the public understands that distinction of what journalism is versus just putting information out there? And this is something I've been pondering on, about whether the professional nature of being a journalist is actually recognized by the people that consume the news, especially in this era where, you know, anyone can become a newsmaker or anything going viral becomes news, essentially.
Yeah, and I think this is a really critical point, and it's an interesting one. I think you're right. I don't think the public necessarily understands it. In fact, I think even the industry is still struggling to come to terms with it. I mean, we're often locked in old ways of thinking about journalism and journalists because too often the discussion, the debate amongst policymakers, amongst journalists themselves, is to argue, ask who is a journalist, as if because you work for a news organization, you can therefore call yourself a journalist, or if you don't work for a news organization, you're not. If you're accredited, you can describe yourself as a journalist, and so on. I've come to the view that the who isn't important. What you are, who you work for, how you make your money, that's not important. What really matters is whether you apply the processes and ethics of journalism to information that you are processing. That's the critical point. Now, if the industry itself can't really come to terms with that, if we haven't agreed on that, then it's perfectly understandable that the public might not necessarily understand the distinction either.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. So if we take the understanding then that Julian Assange is not a journalist, why shouldn't he be extradited and prosecuted for releasing information irresponsibly? What implications does his case have for actual journalists?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting. The thing is that the Obama administration thought long and hard about prosecuting Julian Assange. Make no mistake, the Obama administration was one of the most aggressive in U.S. history in coming out and using the Espionage Act to shut down uncomfortable journalism. They used the Espionage Act more often than all of their predecessors combined to go after, and in almost all of the cases, it was to go after journalists or their sources. But they decided they couldn't prosecute Julian Assange because to do so would set a precedent that would see other legitimate news organizations, such as the New York Times, also in court for revealing classified documents. And that's what came to be known as the New York Times problem in the Obama administration. And I think that's the key. If you look at the way in which the American prosecutors are trying to use the law to go after Julian, you'll see that if they're successful, then they can use those same laws to come after legitimate journalism. And I think that's hugely damaging. I think that's a very, very dangerous step.
I'm speaking to Peter Gresta, veteran journalist and the UNESCO Chair in Journalism and Communication at the University of Queensland. We'll have more conversation after these messages. BFM 89.9. Hello, I'm Shazana, and if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. Today, I'm discussing the implications for press freedom coming out of the U.S. extradition case against Julian Assange with Peter Gresta, veteran journalist and the UNESCO Chair in Journalism and Communication at the University of Queensland. Can you talk us through the decision that was made by the UK courts? I found it to be quite curious because the district judge, Vanessa, I don't even know if I'm saying her name right,
Baraitser,
she essentially said that Julian Assange does have a case to answer to, even while rejecting the US's extradition request.
Yeah, she went through the arguments. It was really interesting because anyone who was listening to the judgment was all but convinced that Julian was going to be extradited because Vanessa Baraitser went through all of the legal arguments point by point and dismissed all of Julian's defense case or arguments. She rejected the idea that he wouldn't receive a fair trial. She rejected the idea that Americans and the world more broadly had a right to the truth about what the US government was up to. She rejected the idea that there were any implications in Julian's case for press freedom. But then at the very end of it, she said that even though that those legal arguments held water, she accepted that Julian's mental state was extremely degraded, that he was suicidal, that he had the capacity and the intellect to commit suicide, and that he was likely to try and commit suicide if he was extradited. So on those grounds alone, on mental health grounds, she said that it would be inappropriate to extradite him to the United States.
Mm-hmm. So she wasn't exactly upholding any freedom of press principles, but she was really doing this to preserve human life, essentially.
Exactly. And in a way, that's where this was really puzzling, because, you know, she then went on to reject a bail application. And you'd have thought that if Julian's mental state is too dangerous for him to be in prison in the United States, then it's probably too dangerous for him to be in prison in the notorious Belmarsh prison in the UK, just inside, you know, in London. And yet she decided that he should remain in prison pending the outcome of an appeal by the US lawyers. I think it reveals the fact that this was probably a highly political decision. It suggests that she was sort of walking a line between trying to find a way between the kind of intense political pressure that she was under against the public pressure, the political pressure to extradite Julian, balanced against the public pressure, the public pressure of his supporters to reject the application. I think the idea of rejecting the extradition request on the grounds of his mental health was probably the most convenient way of doing that.
But I suppose it also means that if on a later day he's judged to be mentally sound, then the extradition could proceed.
Yes, and also if the US can demonstrate to the court's satisfaction that they've taken the steps to protect his mental and physical health.
I guess what's the alternative to Julian Assange facing trial in the US? Is it to let him go free?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really it. You know, Julian's already spent an awful long time in prison. You'll recall that he ran to the Ecuadorian embassy to seek political asylum, and he got stuck there for several years. And he was sentenced to 50 weeks in prison because he jumped bail. Now, he's already served that. There are plenty of people who argue that he's suffered enormously, that his human rights have been abused in the way that he's been treated, and that there's no way that he could get a fair trial in the US because of the way that the political environment has been poisoned, particularly by Donald Trump. And so it's hard to see any other outcome apart from letting him go. So let me to be absolutely clear on this, I think he should be released. I think that he's served enough time. I think that he's suffered enough. I think his human rights have been abused. And I think that if he was to be prosecuted, as I've already said, that that would set a damaging precedent for press freedom. I just don't think that we can think of him as a journalist and that he should be using press freedom arguments in his own defense.
Mm-hmm. Is Julian Assange's case any different from the persecution of other journalists or media defenders around the world? I mean, does the fact that it's occurring, it's involving the US, where free speech principles are guarded so fiercely, is that what makes this particularly significant?
Overall, I think any case that goes after journalists or that undermines press freedom principles are cases we need to be looking at very, very carefully and be concerned about. I'd be careful about making sweeping generalizations, because obviously there will be some cases where journalists deserve to be in prison, where they have put lives at risk, where they have damaged national security without a public interest. You know, I don't believe that journalists should have the right to publish whatever they want without ever being concerned about the consequences. That's not what press freedom is about. It requires a degree of responsibility. But I don't think that in Julian's case, I think that he, I think his case is as important as any other, not, as I said, because he's, I think we can think of him as a journalist, but because of what his case means. Obviously, in the UK, in the US, they have the First Amendment to the Constitution, which is perhaps the clearest and most elegant protection for press freedom and freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of religion anywhere in the world. It's the gold standard. And I suppose that is also why the press has been so robust in the US, why freedom of speech has been such a central part of their political and social philosophy. And so I guess in that regard, this case has gained an awful lot of interest.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to maybe turn attentions to Julian's home country, which is also your home country. And it always surprises me that Julian Assange is Australian. It's always a fact that I overlooked. And so far, the government has refused to intervene in Assange's case, even though there are calls for Prime Minister Scott Morrison to seek a pardon for Assange while Trump is in office. What does this say about how the Australian government views Assange?
I think the Australian government is really conflicted about Assange. I think particularly the current government, the Conservative government, has absolutely no sympathy for WikiLeaks and Julian themselves. They, I think, believe that he broke the law, that he published classified documents, and that he deserves to be in prison. But at the same time, he is an Australian national, and his rights appear to have been abused. And they, you know, the Australian government, I think, recognises that it needs to be standing up for his rights, to be arguing for his rights to be protected. The other problem, of course, is that this, you know, Julian's being prosecuted by the United States, and one of Australia's most important ally is the United States, and Australia doesn't want to do anything that would damage that relationship. Now, personally, I think our government is far too worried about upsetting the United States. I think the relationship's much more robust than our government seems to be giving it credit for, and I reckon that our relationship would stand up to the Australian government criticising it and demanding that Julian's rights be respected and supporting his claims for a pardon and release. But, you know, there are a lot of political and ideological entanglements as well there.
Mm-hmm. Is Julian Assange seen sympathetically by Australians in general?
I think the debate here is very similar to other parts of the world. A lot of people really disagree with what he's done, that dislike him intensely, and you know, believe that he should be in prison. But I think that there are also a lot of other people who believe that, you know, the fact that he's Australian alone should be enough for us to get behind him. The other thing I think was worth pointing out is that his case touches on another really complex debate that's been taking place here in Australia around press freedom. You might recall that a couple of years ago, in 2019, the Australian Federal Police raided the offices of two news organisations, raided two journalists from two news organisations who'd both been responsible for stories involving national security leaks. And that really raised the whole question of press freedom in Australia into the public, onto the public agenda, and made us all painfully aware of the fact that press freedom in Australia has absolutely no formal legal protection. And so Julian's case, I think, is also problematic because it highlights the deficiencies in our own legislation.
And I guess looking at a broad picture of how the public views media and trust of the media, I mean, we're in the final days of the Trump administration now, and there's no doubt that Trump's anti-media rhetoric has been very damaging in terms of eroding public trust. Do you think that it'll make much of a difference at this stage, whether Trump is in office or not, when it comes to efforts to rebuild that trust? I feel like the damage is already done.
I think the damage, certainly, of course, yeah, you're right, the damage has been done. But as long as Trump was in office, the damage was always going to get worse. Now, as long as Trump remains active, and we'll need to see whether he can survive politically after this latest colossally embarrassing debacle. And, you know, there are a lot of people who believe, and I hope they're right, that his outburst in fomenting the attack on the US Congress means that he's politically dead now. But I think I've seen some figures that suggest he still has a tremendous amount of support amongst American Republicans. More than 50% think that of Republicans seem to be right behind him on this. And so I worry that he won't simply disappear, that he'll remain politically active. And if he does, and particularly if he supports conservative press media outlets, One News America, I think, the One News America network, I think is one of those, then I think there's a real chance that we'll see the public trust in mainstream media degrade even further, because basically people will be able to find whatever media supports their own opinions. And I think that's really dangerous. So I'm deeply concerned about the way this unfolds. But if Trump does disappear, then I think there is a chance that we'll see a return to mainstream news.
Mm-hmm. All right. Peter, thank you very much for the chat.
It's been a great pleasure.
I've been speaking to Peter Gresta, veteran journalist and the UNESCO Chair in Journalism and Communication at the University of Queensland. This has been Pressing Matters on the Morning Run. The 10 a.m. news bulletin is coming up next, and then it's over to the Enterprise team. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.